Welcome back to Scotland's premier Fife-based podcast, Fife Club. As always, the first rule of Fife Club is...
Talk about Fife Club! Holy just talk about it, alright? Just talk about it.
Okay.
Oh, shit. I'm actually frightened.
Oh, God.
What have I created?
Yeah, you've definitely created a monster. Why did you introduce it as day as well?
Yeah.
Because you usually say good evening.
I actually don't. I normally say hello.
Whatever.
<There's that. laughs> So, but most folk will listen to it during the day, I think.
Yeah, why not?
Maybe. I hope people listen to it.
All those negative five people now listening to it.
All those people in Somalia, and Ghana, and
half the Somalians will be put off by my shouting. Like, oh, that's far too aggressive for me.
If you listen to Fife Club after midnight, you turn in someone from Kelly. True story.
Yeah.
What happens if you pour water on somebody from Fife?
Well, then they have a bath, and I'm like, oh, thank you very much. That's what I'd say.
Do you think they'd say thank you very much?
No.
Or just like, oh, you can't. You couldn't.
Pretty much.
I thought you were going to say they turned them into someone from Methil.
depending on where you're from in Fife. You know, choose your place.
I've got a rare treat for Kirkcaldians coming up later.
Lovely. So, we just heard there, please talk about us. We really want you to tell at least two friends this week about us. Or if you have 5 minutes, go into iTunes and give us a quick review and a rating. Honestly, it would mean the world to us.
Put it this way, if you go into iTunes and you write a review, 4 to 5 stars would be recommended.
Uh-huh.
And you tell two other people as well. Mm-hmm. What that means is eventually our listenership will go up to the point where you can actually bail out and stop listening to us because there will be other people taking your place.
Oh my God, it's we're like a pyramid scheme.
Yep.
So that's interesting that you're trying to bribe them that way, Mark, because I was going to say, you know, if you do give us a good rating, add in your t-shirt size, and once we get our t-shirts done, we'll send you one.
Yeah, we totally will.
We'll pay for that that 5-star review.
Yeah. We've also made false promises before.
Yeah, so, you know, take it as you will.
No, we will. T-shirts are coming, guys.
Yeah,
we've still got a liker to give a date to Jamie as well.
Yeah.
They've never come forward yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could always aim for the 250.
Yeah.
My sister brought that up tonight. She's like, has that been rescinded so it's safe for me to like the page?
Well, she's the 250th one.
Oh, Jesus.
Please do give us some love on iTunes, and I say, just tell people about us. Even if you don't like us, maybe they might.
Yeah.
If you don't like us, why are you still listening? Oh, because you're a masochist like the rest of us.
That's why I am here.
Now, this week, you find us out on a wee trip. Currently, we are aboard the good ship Fife Club, and we've just sailed down the Forth, sunning ourselves in the late evening warmth.
Jamie, remember that factor 50?
Oh, God.
That's very important.
Oh, God, I've forgotten it.
The sun god will get you.
It's a bit late. He's like a lobster already.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's been a really pleasant evening, hasn't it, chaps?
I'd say it's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. It's been nice.
Ship of fools.
Yeah. fairly calm seas so far as well. It's been not too bad.
I shot an albatross earlier. It'll be great.
Wow. You cooking it?
No.
No. Oh, okay.
Dave and Jamie were up the front doing I'm the King of the World. You guys always holding each other.
So beautiful. We did spend a lot of time cuddling each other. That is an absolute fact.
Very much.
I boarded and captured a tourist boat as well. It was quite fun. Oh,
you did, and it's okay for you to say that now because we're in international waters.
We've left the Forth.
Yeah.
So, who is aboard with us today? Well, around the mic with my good self, Captain Kutch, is the Scourge of the Forth, a.k.a. Admiral Redbeard. It's Jamie.
Gar.
You do look... Out of all Fife Clubbers, you're the one that looks most like a pirate by a considerable distance.
So that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Across from him is a plucky helmsman, also known as the Maid of the Forth. It's Mark.
Wow.
I thought you were going to do something nice about my natural skill for navigation. And I was like, yeah.
Actually, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah.
Maid of a Fourth conjures up Mark on the rocks underneath the Fourth Road Bridge, being a mermaid.
Siren trying to call us in.
Siren trying. Yeah.
Just go past her.
Does he look like a manatee? That's pretty cruel, man.
I think I'm more like a shit old Greg.
I'm old Greg.
Never drank berries from a shop.
And just on the old Greg thing, I once sent Justice a text out of context saying, do you want to come to a party where people wheel at each other? And then he showed it to everyone around work. Look what Jamie sent me. What a kid.
So finally, rescued from a week of prostitution on Leith docks, rub-a-dub-dub, it's the cabin boy who has had his fill of seamen.
Yeah.
Take that how you will. It's James.
Please, yeah. I need proper food.
Oh, dear.
I'm all greasy and full of shame.
You should see the size of his porthole.
You don't hate burning that much, do you?
I'm allowed to say stuff like that. Right. I'm not doing the show anymore. This is great.
Not the heavies.
Yeah. Until they bring the show back again, and I'm just like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And I'm allowed to say derogatory things about you now. You do not hold my UFC ticket.
Yeah.
So take that. You've
never saw fallen so high as a hero and then fallen so hard. As soon as we cross the threshold of the arena,
James, you're a cunt.
Literally within those 2 seconds stopping through, it was like right, we're in, you're a cunt, and walked on. It was even
speaking of the use of the C word, Jamie, that video that I put on, like, on Twitter that I can't remember who found, of the man calling a sheep a cunt. Honestly, it's absolutely magnificent.
That is proper, like, Highland Road rage, isn't it?
He just gets raging at the sheep that's crossing his road. The other one that's actually quite funny is...
Sure it was, like, a DHL driver, isn't it?
Yeah. There's another one. I don't like to praise Australians. I think we all know that. That's one of the rules of Fife Club. We just don't like you Australians. It's our only bit of genuine racism. We just hate Australians.
No, I'm just going to come in on that.
I quite like the Melbourne bunch anyway. Yeah.
I will say also I like the native Aboriginal people. They're a fine lot.
I've got family that's in Australia as well.
Are they Aboriginal?
No.
Then they're cunts.
Wags.
Sorry, James.
They're actually fifers.
Oh,
all right. How do we?
let's roll back on that. But there's one where there's an Australian guy who's got
maybe he was Theresa May. And
is it goats or sheep? I can't remember now, but he keeps calling one of them a cunt.
Is it a goat?
Kevin the goat. Yeah, that's actually quite funny as well.
He's trying to like feed them.
Yeah,
keep marching.
We should maybe get that up on the Fife Club page next week. It is a good one.
Yeah.
So how are we all?
We're all right.
Yeah, doing fine.
Why not?
Good week, yeah.
Cool. Son of us, just doing a bit of fishing out here on the on the yard arm.
Well,
that's a nautical term, right?
Yeah. Off to starboard side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually interested into like what boat do you imagine we're in? Because I'm thinking.
What do you mean, imagine?
Well, sorry. Yeah, well, yeah. Obviously, I'm imagining an old school galleon.
Oh, I was just thinking maybe like a 32. 32-foot like mallard yacht thing, just cruising our way.
I don't know what that is. Is that a floating gin palace?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Just a nice big yacht for a couple of lads having a sail.
I was thinking of a condensed Viking longboat.
That's like a thing up at the up north, the boat that's a pub.
Yeah.
Where is it? Near Fort William. Well, not far from Fort, like 20 minutes from Fort William.
There's one that's
at the lock.
Not
the loch. Well, it isn't a loch.
There's
it's
one
loch.
That's in Loch Gilphead, possibly.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's
another around
one
that way. It's down.
It's one,
down like the Campbelltown.
It's
peninsula.
It's not even a great pub.
Yeah,
but it's a boat. Well, it's a pub.
Yeah,
it's quite incredible.
The one I'm thinking.
There's not even any windows. It doesn't matter. They're in a boat.
The one I'm thinking about is a seafood restaurant that's on a boat.
Oh no. Okay. There's one down Leith like that. Mm. Yeah.
There's also the, in London, there's the Tattershall or Tattershall Castle, mm-hmm. which is a pub on a boat. It's fucking terrible.
Oh, really?
That's about all I have really to say about it.
Fair enough.
Disappointment.
Anyway, you know, I think it looks like the weather's about to turn, so I think we should probably just move on down into the cabin where it'll be just a little bit cozier. Ooh. I think so.
Yeah.
Cool. And so, Jamie, can we read the socials?
Yeah, we'll do that in a moment. So we'll just
can't
make our way.
Plan this.
We'll just make our way down into the cabin now, yeah?
Okay.
Ow. Well, banged my head.
It's clearly not me that's banged my head, is it? Yeah, because I'm short. So if you don't know that.
Did anyone bring any rum? Go down really nicely.
Yeah, we've got some rum. We'll get that out in a minute.
Because I always think that we're the sort of people that would be on a boat. We wouldn't be up the stairs with the captain all dressed up at the top table. We'd be downstairs with a fiddle music and a drinking rum out of a jug. Yeah.
And you say we're Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, very much.
I think I've told a story before in Fight Club, but going round with Royal Yacht Britannia, and he had a thing about Lady Diana, and it was like, Lady Diana didn't just hang out with the officers in the officers' mess, she also like going below decks with all the men there. There's a picture of her of like, just surrounded by all these sailors. I bet she did. She had a great time.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Yeah. She also liked to die in a tunnel. What? No.
Whoa.
Wow. No. Yes. A little bit.
No. She was dying in a tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a shame. Probably a nice woman.
Wait.
Princess of our hearts.
It's been 20 years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We can joke about it now.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, it's not quite 20 years now, but yeah.
I was in the same farmhouse this weekend.
Yeah.
Where I was when it happened, and I thought, oh, it meant nothing now, and it means nothing.
Nothing then, yeah. It means nothing to me.
But she was like a candle in the wind. Unreliable.
And you know, I've actually got a fair amount of sympathy for the women.
I
feel bad about making that really crass remark.
It wasn't her, it was the reaction to it that was ridiculously over the top.
Yeah.
And I heard an interview with William today where he was like, when he was a kid, he couldn't understand why people were so upset about a woman dying who they'd never met.
Yeah.
Just how I feel about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think she had a hard time.
Yes.
Ended up being there for all the wrong reasons.
Well, if you're married to Prince Charles, you know, it's, I'd rather take the tunnel than stay with him, to be fair.
Okay.
I was rolling back with James. James is steamed right back.
It's like a white gnomagan.
I don't know why I'm so aggro today. It's got to me.
It's the nautical adventure that we're on.
It's the sea.
It's the sea air.
Just that slow rocking motion. So, anyway, Jamie, now we're downstairs and we're nice and cosy. Would you like to give us the socials?
Yes, I would. Please speak to us. We do have Wi-Fi on the boat. Satellite uplink, obviously. Facebook.com/FiveClubPod or at FiveClubPod. Twitter at FiveClub. Email us. Email ken@fiveclub.co.uk. Instagram, FiveClub. Or get us on our shiny new website, www.fiveclub.co.uk.
And also, Dave's been listening religiously to the shipping forecast as well. So if you just sneak something into the shipping forecast, he'll hear it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we're going to talk about this week, the Defenders from Netflix, the Marvel series that has brought together not one, not two, not three, but four of their superheroes. We've got Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage and Iron Fist, all brought together. It's been building to this from day one, and yeah, it finally hit.
It's one of these things that, like, I watch all. I have really, realistically, very little interest in any of these characters whatsoever. But at the same time, it's like, because it's like the blockbuster event thing, like of the top thing, then you're kind of drawn into it. And it's like, I hated Daredevil when I was a kid. I read comics. It was like Daredevil was just shite as far as I was concerned. Never heard of Luke Cage, had never heard of Jessica Jones, and had never heard of Iron Fist, Jamie's favourite.
See, like, Daredevil, probably, yeah, he is the headline act in that, and that's why he's kicked it all off.
Well, he's been around. Iron Fist's been around for a long time.
Iron Fist and Luke Cage. I mean, I'm surprised you've not heard of Luke Cage, because he's a fairly, like, in the sort of the beeline of Marvel heroes, he's fairly sort of popular and famous, but then again, I suppose you weren't a black kid.
No.
Yeah. And that's entirely the market that was aimed at. Yeah. So,
which is actually quite cool, which is quite a good idea.
Yeah, definitely.
Unless it's total marketing, but at the same time, if it gives somebody a relatable hero. Then,
I've read cool things about Daredevil for years where we get blind kids writing them letters saying that they, you know, read it in Braille and stuff. And
can relate and stuff.
Yeah, because they print it in Braille, Daredevil. Yeah. Or they used to anyway.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool.
It's how... It must be really descriptive. Has to.
It'll be like audio description, but for
that's kind of cool. But Jessica Jones. I'm not surprised because she was actually from was it Max Comics, I think, originally, which was a Marvel like subprint.
She's got such a big backstory. Yeah, as well.
Much more of an adult themed story. So never really much gelled with the whole Marvel universe, but. Sort of later on kind of has done and came...
But she's one of the street-level people, like the rest of the characters.
Like the rest of it. She's also got a really horrific backstory. I mean, they kind of covered it in the series, but the books themselves are...
It's really intense.
Graphic.
That's the tortured by David Tennant.
Yeah, the Purple Man.
Jessica!
His character is called the Purple Man, and in the comic books, he's quite literally purple.
Yeah. Right.
And they hint at it because he usually is wearing purple, and I think there's that one point
he's always wearing purple.
He ends up with like purple veins. What is it? Yeah. He takes something or somebody gives him something.
I can't remember. I
can't remember what it is, but yeah, they keep hinting at it. But
so he's more of the kind of super villain than the sort of like the show had him as some sort of like twisted psychopath, but without any kind of power or anything like that.
Well, he did have a power. He had mind control.
The ability to control people.
You're right.
Simon Says.
Oh yeah, because he stopped. God, I remember the bit when he stopped the whole police station. Oh, that makes sense.
Sort of suggestive power. He was quite malicious in the comic books as well, but certainly because it's comics, he had that. His thing was that he was quite literally purple, and I can't remember why.
Well, did you think about the Defenders itself?
Yeah, so I thought it was good. The first episode was a bit slow, but I think it was necessary to kind of get you where everybody was. Because it wasn't until about the third episode when we actually finally got everybody together.
Third, I think because third. I was a bit annoyed about the slow pace. I can understand it for a first episode, but any more than that, when there's only, eight episodes?
Yeah.
It's a bit much.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I
think this, once you got into the steam of things, the third, fourth, fifth episodes, I think those middle set were really quite good.
I haven't seen the last one. Shy of seeing the whole series.
So... Mm. I just got lackluster. I think the end was not.
Didn't feel tense enough.
Tense enough. It just didn't feel like there was anything at the end. It just felt like they had a fight and they had to get through that fight to get to the end of it all. When you consider you've had five series building to this, it just felt a bit like
also the first episode. I liked what we're doing with directing with the different colours for everyone.
Well, yeah.
Because we had the colours at the intro, and then it was Jessica Jones, it was because they are slightly different in the thing, but hers was more blue, like shots, Luke Cage is slightly yellow, etc.
There was always red whenever.
Daredevil, sorry.
Yeah, no, because that was one of the things I had said. It was like, I wonder how they're going to do it because tonally, every single one of them have been. In colour tone, the actual colour tone of the series, they've all been different.
Yeah.
They have taken on the sort of the core colours of the characters, like costumes and stuff. Like, I mean, Luke Cage was gold and orange and yellow I liked how they did that. And then doing some scenes, it was like if the scene was where there was two characters, if the scene was more about a particular character, it's more on their. Yeah. Their colour tones.
I just want to run through very quickly, what I liked and what I didn't like about it. Choreography was much better.
Much better.
They replaced What's-His-Face's Iron Fist in certain fight scenes with a double.
Double, yeah.
But when it went back to him, he's just not a natural martial artist. He's just not.
Well, again, there was a whole thing where through Iron Fist he'd only had like 15 minutes before each fight to put it together. They didn't send him away for like a month or two months.
But and also so choreography is better.
Mm-hmm.
Bollocks, I've lost my stream now. So
yep, choreography.
One second. Choreography was better. Oh, what I didn't like, some of the bits I liked the, I thought the directing after the first episode was really weird. But it got better in the later episodes, I thought.
Yeah.
In the middle episodes and in the later episodes got better. But also the what they did with like Iron Fist, he's still like a petulant child.
Yeah.
And he spends a lot of time getting tied up and not doing anything and being useless when he's meant to be pretty powerful. And then they also relegated all the, like, Misty Knight gets relegated to do fuck all.
I think
they had them in it. And it's okay to do that with Foggy and with Karen because Paige, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
But with someone like Misty Knight, whereas Karen, Colleen Wing got
was,
too much.
Yeah.
And then Misty Knight and Night Nurse, but it's not Night Nurse.
Claire,
It's really Night Nurse. Didn't get enough.
White Tiger.
Didn't get enough action sort of stuff. You know what I mean? It was it was strange. It was weird.
Just like you, Jamie.
I totally get that. I mean, I can see why, to try and concentrate more on the core four, why they did that. But yeah, like you say, Colleen seemed to get a lot of time. But then I think, although it's difficult because, like, I was listening to another podcast that was talking about it and sort of saying, you know, do you think there was some of these things were done in response to Iron Fist? But actually, Defenders was being filmed as Iron Fist went out.
Mm.
So, I mean, the chances of them being able to make too many changes to the story based on the reception of Iron Fist. And that's what they say, the interesting thing with him, Iron Fist in particular, is, was he really actually meant to be that annoying and whiny? Because they make a point of it in this, and that he is a petulant child, that he's almost like not at the peak of his game. Because like you said, he's supposed to be amazing. He's supposed to be the
and he's supposed to be together, the
immortal Iron Fist.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a character that is his name is the Kung Fu Master in the comic books.
Yeah.
So the Kung Fu Master gets owned by Daredevil, who has been trained in the same style, but third hand.
Doesn't have a fire hand.
Doesn't have a fire hand. And he owns him. So it's like, what are they doing with that? Is there a point to that? Because it's kind of seems that there might be. Is it like this is a character that's to grow? But
I think that's true as well. Because I think, like, looking at them, I just on one of the two of the things you said, I do wonder if, like, when they were making the Iron Fist, like, as they were making it, they probably went Colleen Wing, because the actress that plays Colleen Wing is really good.
She's better than the guy that does
Iron Fist. Totally. So I do wonder if they were just like, actually, the actress is so good that we maybe need to give her more of a platform. Yeah. So I wonder if that was happening.
Mm.
In terms of the, like, I thought the pacing was terrible as well.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It was like, big fight, and then nothing, and then no cliffhangers. Nothing really particularly
happened. We're going to stay in a restaurant for a whole episode.
So, yeah.
Great. Even though that was one of my favourite episodes.
I was just going to say,
the directing was great.
Because I thought that was quite a good job of containing it.
Yeah.
And, the way they did it, I quite like that episode. Like, that first scene when they get together, and you have the moment with Luke Cage taking the bullets and Danny hiding behind him.
In the restaurant or in
in the office, that very first time. That I absolutely loved because that is Heroes for Hire. That's straight from the comic books. Because the two of them are like buddies and work together all the time. So it was just like that hint.
I liked that, apart from the directing was really weird and made the scene look worse than it could have done. And the set, that whole building looked cheap as fuck.
Yeah, definitely.
It looked completely ridiculous.
It was, I kind of think that it was like super white and bright.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if that was the way to do, rather than have all the murky colours, try and converge all the colours of the heroes
just to make
white space.
I know, but it just didn't look good.
Yeah.
It looked like a cheap knockoff of Puff Daddy's living room. but the thing about, like, what you're saying about, like, supposedly, like, Danny Rand, Iron Fist, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Like, that, is, I think, is always the problem with, like, these superhero mashup things.
Yeah.
It's always, you end up with, like, such levels of, like, power asymmetry. Mm-hmm. It's like Superman does something with anyone else. Well, it doesn't matter. Superman can basically punch a planet in the face, right? And then there's some street-level guy with a bow and arrow going, like, you know what I mean? There's just like, and there's an asymmetry between all of them because Jessica Jones is pretty strong and can jump a bit.
Yeah.
And obviously shite at drinking by the looks of it. Wasted after a couple of snips. Like, Luke Cage is obviously pretty hard, but he's pretty slow.
Yeah.
And like, doesn't like, is just big and bulletproof and stuff. And then,
do you mean like Mos Def slow or?
Yeah. But it's like, but also like, again, as you were saying, there's like, the characters, I just don't think they're particular. Like, apart from Luke Cage, Luke Cage is really likable. Like, I like him. He is, like, he's annoyingly sulky in that way that you have to get the hero to go on the journey, but he's got to be a reluctant hero at the beginning. But we've already seen that happening in a whole series.
Yeah.
So we don't need that to happen again.
I think he's likable as well because he's got that sort of righteous justice kind of thing.
Yeah, well, he did that speech to Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, it's a privilege. You're beating up, like, black kids on the street when you're a billionaire. Yeah. I was like, this is what everybody should say to fucking Batman.
Yeah.
But also, Jessica Jones, right, is basically like a souped-up, boozier version of Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
And I pretty much like Veronica Mars more. And then the other one as well, the one thing...
I think Jessica Jones is really hot, but... You know. She's an alcoholic, she's a slob.
I wasn't raving about her attractiveness.
Right, okay.
But in terms of personality,
but, Jimmy, you just... Yeah.
Yeah, women are just disposable things to objects. Ornaments, even. But
is that because I kill them and put them on my mantelpiece?
Yes. All that, like, hanging hands that you've got.
No longer comfortable.
But the other thing as well that really pisses, like, I don't know, like, it's just in my head because I've got a great mate from Sunderland, right? Every time I hear Kunlun, I always hear Sunlun.
How are you, man? He's from Sunlun.
Iron Fist from Sunlun.
Trying to get back to Sunlun so hard.
Yeah. Just fighting off barcode bastards from Newcastle. Right, left, and centre with this glowing Macam fist. that's always like slightly preposterous, but I think in the end, I think it was like worthwhile telly, right?
I think it was worth watching. I liked the fact that it was only 8 episodes. Some of the individual series have felt long.
Yeah, they've strained it too much
because they've put in 3 or 4 filler episodes, and it's like, see, if there were only 10 episodes, I think that would be about right. But you kind of get that point where it's feeling awful, awful long.
I would say the only extra... Sigourney Weaver was amazing.
Yeah, she was. Really good, yeah.
And the stick was really good in it as well.
Yeah, he was.
Guys are good.
Is it worth mentioning that the Punisher series is coming out quite soon as well?
That's...
Because I wondered
I was hoping that the Punisher was going to play into the Defenders.
There
was rumours that was going to happen.
I think that was a big loss.
I thought he was going to be like a Hail Mary save.
That's what I was assuming.
Just like appear right at the end and get in the mix and then that, you know, hightail it and then it just...
One shot and then like just thumb up and...
Something along those lines, but they didn't do it, and I suppose they don't need to
because they're probably going to have another series next time where that's going to happen.
And I think his series will be interesting. It looks like they are going to go for the absolute ultra violence as well, which is good because that's what the Punisher is and needs. So let's see how that turns out.
John Bernthal is the Punisher. Is fantastic.
He's
excellent.
I think
he
played that role quite well.
I also thought when they said we're going to have a friend from South America coming, I thought it was going to be Fisk and he was going to be a member of the Hand now. An immortal member of a Hand, but then it wasn't, and I was disappointed.
Because I think he's still in jail anyway, still in Iron Heights.
Well, Fisk is in Big Guy.
Vincent
D'Onofrio. He was amazing. Yeah, he was the best thing about Daredevil.
Definitely.
Yeah, like I genuinely like. Actually, he's one of the best baddies I've ever seen. In anything.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
There was like proper depth.
Yeah, he was good. I did quite like Kilgrave and Jessica Jones as well.
I wish there was more time with that story though. They sort of killed him off at the end of that season.
He's in the next series. How he's in it,
It might be in her head.
Might be in her head, or it might be like a collective consciousness of anybody that's been with him. The other thing is he has come back from the dead in the comic books before, so, you know.
What, comic book people coming back from the dead?
The ultimate get us. But yeah, so that's...
JC Zero Beat.
It's, it was good and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Good. I would say it's better than Iron Fist, not as good as Luke Cage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you've got Jessica Jones and then you've got Daredevil.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't read
Season 2 Daredevil, I think, was...
Well, that was poor.
I liked that.
For me, it's Season 1 Daredevil, Season 2 Daredevil and Jessica Jones are joint. Actually, Jessica Jones is probably above that. Then Season 2 Daredevil, then Luke Cage, then Defenders, then Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Hopefully this is a bounce back for them from Iron Fist, and they've gone one level up.
Yeah.
And hopefully Punisher will be next better again. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah,
Iron Fist should be the best, but it isn't.
Yeah.
Yep.
Should we? Just because we haven't actually, you haven't seen any of those things. Should we ask you what you've been up to whilst you haven't been there? haven't been watching telly, James.
Yeah, I've had no life the past 2 weeks. I've been in the
snap.
Not a fully enjoyable life, but I've been doing a show at the Fringe Festival. I was doing A Field of Our Own at Easter Road and Hibernian Football Club last week. So that was from the Tuesday to the Sunday, because we did some public dress rehearsals and performances. Apparently Irvin Welsh came to see it, but he didn't hang around, so I was a bit disappointed by that. I was wanting to try and meet him and see what he thought about the show.
Have you checked his Twitter feed?
I have. He just tweets about Trainspotting by In Your Face Theatre Company all the fucking time. All the fucking time. It drives me nuts. Like, I've got friends who work with In Your Face Theatre who do Trainspotting live at the Fringe. Go see it. It's really good. One of the best pieces of theatre you'll see in Scotland in a long time. But it gets my tits when they just message him. It's like, it's fucking great doing Irvin Welsh's play and blah, blah, blah. And he's retweeting it all the time. It's like, mate, you do this every day for the same people, for the same company. Do us a favour. Who's doing a show about your favourite club, which got really good reviews. All Edinburgh Theatre gave us a 4-star review. Scotsman gave us 3 stars, but it was quite a positive response.
It was a positive review.
I read the Scotsman one.
Apparently there was some terrible fifer in it, they said, with a convincing Edinburgh accent.
It was actually an Irish accent. And the funny thing about that, I've been telling everyone I've been doing the show with and who's not been in the show, it's like, in the play I do an Irish accent, but I find by like talking absolute nonsense outside of the show, I can do a better Irish accent not in the play. When I'm trying to read a script, it's fucking awful. But any other time, it's absolutely fine. But people were just jumping in. The story of the play was basically about the formation of the Club of Hibernians. So started off with the Whelehan family coming over from Ireland over to Scotland, basically because of the potato famine, their journey from Glasgow, walking from Glasgow over to Edinburgh, the formation of the club from the Catholic Young Men's Society that was there, formed with Father Canon Haran, and how the club became what it was, from just a charity a kind of community group to a charity to a professional football team. And it almost, well, the way it's told, it's set the tone for professional football, so the idea of professionalisation and making money, because there were so many Irish communities that were coming to Hibs games, paying to put towards the church and the community, so they saw it as an opportunity to kind of invest in that and make it a football club. So it's not just about the football club, it's all about the Irish community, the sectarianism between Scottish people and Irish people at the time, people settling in Edinburgh. So it's quite a really well rounded story.
I think that's pretty interesting, the community setting thing. So I know, like, certainly my family were Irish, came across, settled in Edinburgh, had Teig spray painted across their neighbour's wall because they all lived together at one point. But yeah, the certainly struggles of Catholic community
was,
and stuff like that.
It was quite a tense time. And that's part of what we show in the play as well, represented by members of other teams. We've got the Hearts making an appearance in that, which is probably one of my favourite moments, is during a Christmas football scene, one of the guys in the cast is in Hearts gear from back then. He gets, and every time, I think for the second half anyway, he just got booed to fuck. And it's just like, ooh. And it was great because I played a character called the Navvy, which is just a representation of the working class navvies back then, back to sort of like people who worked on the bridges, trains, train lines, things like that. So that was what my character was all about. So it's quite good to do these scenes where I was like causing a hassle or shouting at people or beating people up. It's quite cool when you've got a guy who's 6 foot tall and you're stepping up to him as if you're going to take him out and you're looking up and it's like, yep, I could take you. That's the way it was going to happen. But it was really good fun. It was quite emotional at times as well. Like for me, I didn't think I'd get so invested in the play, but it's quite a really good story. And it was nice to see the Hibernian Football Club fans getting involved in it. I think when we first came out this, we're like, how are they going to respond? I don't think they're going to like that. They're going to look and go, ah, this is bollocks. But
it's also straight away you've limited yourself to a particular audience.
Well, that was it. But there was a lot of people that came who weren't Hibs fans as well, but the majority were Hibs fans because it got sold through. I think I mentioned this before on a show where only a quarter of the allocation went to the Friends Company, the rest went to the football club, and they sold it online. So it was mainly Hibs fans. A lot of them turned out in their Hibs gear as well. They had the strips on, things like that. And it was great because they really enjoyed the show. They were going out to the forums for the club and responding and kind of putting out their thoughts out. We're still getting responses and emails and text messages saying they've enjoyed the show. And that's really cool. It's really cool. At the end, we do an ending song and it goes to the last part. So it starts off as an original song, but then it goes into Sunshine on Leaf.
Right.
And being in that, singing that, and then having a full packed, every night we sold out, there's about 150 odd people there. All of them singing along to Sunshine on Leaf and then leaving stage and I was shouting, Hibs! Hibs! It's cool. It was really awesome. You know,
did you feel like Justin Bieber for a moment?
I did. It felt amazing. Well, the first night it happened, we were taken aback. Like, me and Mark are at the front row and we're singing it. And we were just kind of looking straight, singing away. And then they started singing along and chanting and we just looked at each other and, wow, this is awesome. Sing on. But the response has been fantastic. I'd like to think we're going to do it again. There's a lot of chat of maybe doing it during the winter break in the season. I don't think we'll be doing it at Easter Road because it'll be fucking freezing. Yes. Like, that was the common complaint I got from everyone. It was like, it's really cold. And there's just me walking around going, it's not right, it's not bad, it's room temperature. But it was quite a unique space to do it in the concourse of the East Stand and walking in and doing it there. It was a rigged kind of, I'll try and get photos for you for the YouTube thing, but it was quite a small set, not a small set, but a very simple set. There wasn't really a lot of moving parts to it. It was more like scaffolding at the back and working off that. So to get a really good response from the Hibernian fans, theatre goers, my old tutor Scott Johnson came in and he cried. Yes, we've done it, we broke him. And he's quite bad for falling asleep at shows, so for him to get emotional over it, I was like, yes, we've done it. So it's been great, it's been emotional. I think we're all kind of we're having a bit of withdrawal being off. Like, we finished on the Sunday and it was just an amazing experience. I recommend it to anyone. It's a shame I've not managed to catch any of the Fringe as much. I've only seen the day we guys went to see Big Howard Little House. That was probably one of the only shows I've seen in the Fringe so far. But it's been excellent, and then to get a chance to just be about it and be part of the Fringe again has been excellent. So hopefully we'll do it again and hopefully be other stuff on the horizon. But for that, yeah.
Cool. Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Oh, sad I missed it.
So that was the frustrating thing, is that that week was the week that I didn't take off.
That was the other thing. It was like the tickets sold out so quickly. They, as soon as the catalogue for the Fringe come out, that's when all the tickets go on sale right away.
Yeah.
And it was within a week everything sold out. And then we put that extra date on, and that sold out within like 2 hours. It was not going to last long. We did a public dress rehearsal for friends and family. So I mentioned that I've got family over in Australia. Some of them are over just now for the month, so I got them to come and see the show, and they had a great time. So it was, for me, I was all round experience. I was happy with it. Excellent. I mean, if they ever do one about Dunfermline, I'll be all about it. But they wouldn't do it, so fuck it, I'm just going to take this Hibs on instead.
And it would just be about how they're shite. So.
I don't know.
And state brides.
Yeah. I'll just get Jim Leesman just to stand there. Not do anything.
Read some of his poetry.
Yeah.
I guess speaking of Fife and doing like the obligatory like Fife related thing.
Yeah, that
Jim Leesman leads us into something. And reviews, that ties us in. Yeah. Well, I'm actually going to do a restaurant review.
What?
Wow.
I don't know. Not only is it a restaurant review, but it's a restaurant review. Well, it's a review of a restaurant in Kirkcaldy.
Oh.
I can hear Max spitting at us.
This is already starting on a bad note.
Look, guys, I know what you're thinking. A restaurant in Kirkcaldy.
Yeah, what?
Really?
I'm surprised it hasn't burnt down right
now. Well, I know.
Rat burgers?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you're thinking of a restaurant in Kirkcaldy, you're probably imagining a series of rabid, six-fingered, hairy-handed, mutant orphan children fighting tooth and claw over a trough of generic brown gruel, dreaming lustily that their half-starved, swollen bellies will be treated with a drop of Mr. McFagan's sleepy, sleepy poison, and the enduring nightmare of striving for life in Fife's second least awful town will soon be over. Pretty accurate?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that was
those are much good
what
ones.
I was imagining.
But alas, you'd be wrong. I have to say, the Tipsy Cow, which is a restaurant, giving a brief review, actually very worth. It's very much worth a venture into Satan's armpit for. it's the kind of vibe of the place. I don't know if it's new, but I've certainly not seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in there. It's on the high
street.
It's
not one I've heard of.
Yeah, it's not one I'd heard of either. It's like kind of American style craft beer and burger kind of joint. It's got that kind of. Yeah, barbecue kind of feel about it. I think allegedly, according to Mags, but Mags is not entirely reliable. She says that it's got a sister premises in Edinburgh, so uh-huh. You know, Kirkcaldy sisters. I know where you think that's probably going, but it's not. but instead, like, I'm genuinely just they're going to praise a pretty. Well, it's a very decent Fife eatery, because, like, we don't have a superfluity of them, do we?
No.
Quite frankly, considering Dunfermline was what, once described as a culinary wasteland. So it's not like there's a lot going on there. In terms of food, I had the brisket, which I thought was interesting. I'm obviously not a Jewish boy with an overbearing mother-in-law, but I've got to say, it was pretty darn good. Not what I imagined brisket to be. Like, a brisket I've had in the past has been kind of dry and you've added kind of sauce to it.
All right, yeah.
Whereas this was very much a kind of, like, sort of nice pieces of well-cooked, though I would say slightly over-seasoned, beef, and it was kind of swimming around in this kind of red wine and gravy jus.
Like the gravy, yeah.
And you sort of had the fish in there to get into it, and I thought that was pretty darn good.
It's pretty much the American style of brisket. That's how they, you know, it's like barbecued long. It's seasoned really well. It's usually left in the seasoning like for days.
Yeah,
and then
it crumbles.
Yeah, and then it's barbecued or smoked for like 12-13 hours, low and slow, and then it's, you know, cut up and then. A good helping of gravy, a nice sort of gravy over the top of it.
It was, yeah, I have to say, I thought it was really good. I went in, they've got lots of options, like, I have to say, like, a very good number of options. Heavy on meat, obviously. I was quite disappointed I didn't go for a burger, but I just, you know when sometimes you just sit down, you're not in the mood.
Yeah.
It's like, you've got to be in the mood for a burger. And what I find a lot of the time...
I always find it's when I'm somewhere which is, like, really posh and, like, I should be having something else, but I'm looking at the menu going, that burger.
Yeah, exactly. There's something about having a burger in the wrong place.
Yeah,
that's really good.
Especially when everybody else is having something, like, off the a la carte menu and you're sitting there with your big, filthy, fat burger. Yeah. It's like, ha.
But also, like, burgers nowadays, right? Every time you go for a burger in a place, it's always, like, ridiculously big.
Yeah.
As well these days.
You can't eat it with your hands anymore.
Yeah, you can't, like, there's no need, like, genuinely, restaurateurs of the world, not that everyone's listening, but honestly, if you make a normal-sized burger that is delicious, that is worth, like, a million giant-sized average burgers.
Yeah, totally.
If you know what I mean, like, and yeah,
there's some out there with some of the combinations I do quite enjoy, like when you're sticking in a bit of black pudding or something like that, and it does end up making it huge. But there's a payoff. I think sometimes just a good burger.
Yeah, there's a burger stand in Edinburgh during the Fringe, which is really good for that. They have a big nice burger with a bit of bacon and some haggis with some cheese over the top. I need to remember. It's called a Highlander, I remember that. And it was lovely. It was really good.
Warner Burger used to be really good at a Fringe, but they've shut down. Well, one of our places shut down anyway, the main one.
Yeah, I'm going to challenge the fact that I don't think bacon has a place on a burger.
I can understand that. I like it, but I can...
No, it's a nice little salty, smoky payoff.
Gives it.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I'm pretty strong on no bacon on the burger.
What about blue cheese?
Oh yeah, oh, blue cheese is delicious on a burger.
In the burger.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Blue cheese stuffed burgers, that moment when you just bite into it and it just starts spewing. Oh.
I'll kind of conclude my review by saying my mum had the fish and chips, claimed it was amongst the best fish and chips she'd ever had.
Wow.
And I tried it and I have to say I thought it was very good. Mm-hmm. I still think the Old Chain Pier, is it the Old Chain Pier? Yeah, in Edinburgh, I still think it's got the edge for me. But it was really good. Didn't have any of the drinks because I was driving, so that was a bit of a shame. So I didn't actually get to see what beers were on there. Mm. The one thing I would say is portions were absolutely enormous. Yeah. Like, two people easily share one tray. Do you hear that word that I said there? I said the word tray. what should food not be served on?
It should be a plate.
Absolutely. Like, unless you're some kind of southern, like, rib shack or something like that. Like in Louisiana, you're sitting outside, like, trying to fight off flies or something like that as these giant sticky ribs come down. There's no need for a tray. But anyway, I have to say, it was good. Like trays. Oh, trays. We're in Europe. Like, we don't need trays. Even Kirkcaldy is technically in Europe. Right?
Just, and no more.
But still, nonetheless, I guess that's to make up for the fact that the portions were huge. Chips were good. Coleslaw was average. Nobody seems to get coleslaw right. Yeah. That I would say. But anyway, I'd be well keen on a return visit, and I'd sort of conclude by giving it a 4 out of 5 Carnegie rating.
They'll kill over unionist workers.
Absolutely. That one's just for you. But in Kirkcaldy terms, I guess that's a 4 million out of 5 Carnegie rating. So, but anyway, yeah, definitely. I
mean, is that because they're counting it on all their fingers?
Yeah. Love it. There you go. If anyone ever wants to take me out, I'll do more restaurant reviews.
Four of Adam Smith's pins.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, if anybody wants to take you out, don't say that when you've just slagged off Kirkcaldyites.
Yeah.
They might actually take you out.
Yeah. Well, that's probably true.
Yeah, Ralph will be sitting outside with a claw.
I'm really, yeah. I'm sort of really looking forward to Ralph listening to that bit.
There's a big thing happening on Saturday night.
A freak show.
Yeah. that's really about it, isn't it?
It's Jesse Owens racing a horse, isn't it?
Yeah. Or remember
Michael Phelps racing.
Oh, so disappointing.
Remember again, just to point out, way back, right at the start on our first Fantasy Fight Club, when you put Mayweather versus McGregor because it will never happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look where we are now.
Wow. How things have changed in that short period of time.
It's not me that's crazy, it's the world.
Yeah.
27, 20,
there were some.
24 episodes later.
To think that you would say not a lot of people listen to this show, but I'd imagine Dana White and the people at Showtime did. James
Espinosa just sitting there
with a
cigar.
This guy's got it. He's got the right idea. I'm not going to pay him for it. I'm not even going to say it's his idea, but put it together.
So yeah, what do we think? What do you think is going
to
happen?
I think it's going to be a better fight than people are putting out to be. I really do.
I actually kind of agree. I actually think the footage you released of him sparring Paul Malnaggi, who is retired for a year or two, even if that's, it was only 15 seconds, but even if that's the best 15 seconds he had, I didn't think he'd even do, like, that would be his best 15 seconds against Paul Malnaggi. So, and there are people who are saying that he clearly won that, like, as a fight, as a 12-round sparring session. And I think it'll be more interesting than I initially thought it was going to be, but I'll tell you what, actually, John Kavanagh, Conor McGregor's head coach.
Yeah,
I was listening to an interview of him just yesterday, and he was saying, you know, all these boxing people think that we're going to get absolutely destroyed, and we think we're going to knock out Floyd Mayweather. So one of us is living in a delusion.
Yeah.
And which one we're going to find out on Saturday night. Now, John Kavanagh has forgotten more about combat sports, 100 times more than I'll ever know about combat sports.
Yeah.
But I just can't see McGregor winning. But I would love him to, because Mayweather's a complete
dick.
Like, just waste of oxygen.
Yeah.
There's a great article in The Guardian that I was reading today, and it was going back to like where it was a bit of a like where does McGregor come from kind of thing. And because a previous American guy had done it, and it's quite funny the contrast between this guy doing it and the other one. He's like, we went like the previous journalists went back and basically got spun a whole load of yarns by like these kids in Dublin, like, oh, Connor, you know, all those on the edge of the drugs and gun scene and all this kind of thing. And he's like, it wasn't like that. He was he was, you know, like there's an interview with his dad in this bit as well. And it's really interesting. They also speak to his old boxing coach and Paddy Houlihan as well gets interviewed as well. And I think the general consensus, they were all saying we think McGregor will win, but they weren't doing it in that way that, you know, there's a lot of bluster about any kind of fight just to try and make it seem a worthwhile thing to do. But this time they were just, it was that measured, we think he'll win. Or at the very least, I think they think they'll surprise him. Mm. Like, to me, I know much less about this stuff than you do, or all you guys, because UFC's not my thing, and boxing, I only dip in and out of.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it seems like, to me, this is one that'll probably just go the distance, and Mayweather will just basically see it out in a really kind of boring, anticlimactic way.
I agree, but I think that McGregor might be able to steal a moral victory in the eye of casual fans.
If he can last that long.
So he'll last that long, he'll win a few rounds, he'll make it look like Mayweather is running, in quotes, because he's not, he's just resetting. But they'll say, oh, he's running away from him, when he won't be. And then, so then McGregor takes on the shine as the best combat sports person on the planet, even if he loses. Long as he doesn't lose badly. If he gets beaten down, then that's different. But if he survives.
I was listening to Dan Hardy talking about it, and he was sort of saying that, you know, it is difficult to judge. He was saying, I have no, obviously he's very much the MMA side of things, you know, UFC. But he was saying, like, just as somebody that has been a fighter, he can't judge it straight away, because the problem that Mayweather faces with McGregor is that he's used to boxers, fighting boxers who move like boxers. McGregor doesn't move like a boxer. Like, even in this boxing match, he won't move like a boxer. He'll move like McGregor does, and if there's one thing that he has like got really good at is his movement, is he's ducking and diving, he's sliding about, it, moving all the time, and it's like that's what could totally throw Mayweather is that he's not used to this, and Mayweather's known to be fast at, you know, fast at moving the defensive side, sort of judging when a punch is going to come and getting out of the way. It's like he might have met his match on this.
It's quite interesting that he mentions movement, like the switching stance things. A lot of boxing pundits are saying that that takes a lot of energy, it wears you out a little bit. But Conor McGregor's style is completely based on switching his stance, moving into different positions. But being
various
awkward.
Points, he will square up though.
Yeah.
In terms of how his movement, there will be points where, and that's a moment where McGregor, where Mayweather can potentially catch him.
It's more kind of closing the distance, but for yourself. Because McGregor's always going to have that range and positioning, so he needs to kind of close the gap. Because Mayweather's an excellent defensive boxer. He'll find, if you kind of run at him, he's going to go out of the way and he's going to take a few shots with it. So that's the tricky part with McGregor. So the first few rounds are going to be a chess match. I don't think people are going to expect that, but I reckon that it's going to be a very kind of tight chess match for the first few rounds. You won't see a total scrap right away, I don't reckon. I think there's going to be a lot of kind of fighting for position, kind of figuring each other out. But then
it's interesting because like some others that I've heard talking about it have said that they reckon McGregor might just come out straight away and try something.
That'd be a
straight in with a big left hand.
Just to try it, and then if it doesn't work, then reset.
I certainly think he'll
the problem with that is it's the energy expenditure.
Exactly. It's a 12 round fight. It's a huge difference.
He does not have a big tank.
No, he doesn't have a big tank in 5 round MMA fights. Never mind 12 round boxing fights, which is completely different muscle groups from what he's used to working.
When you think about the first time he fought Nate Diaz, he tried to knock him out right away. And then he was fucked. And then he got choked out. That was, a lot of people slag him off for that, but it's like, no, he put his hands up and said he didn't use his energy wisely.
And then the second time, it was much more measured, and you could tell that he watched how Diaz fought, and there was definitely a lot more tactics.
Still gassed
a bit, again, you'd hope that
he goes in with the same sort of action.
I've given
the biggest fight of his life, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been telling everyone he's got 4 rounds to win in. He can't win it in 4 rounds, and Mayweather's going to drag it out.
Well, I've got one. My one final point on this is I wonder if there's a psychology aspect of like hubris with Mayweather in this. Because Mayweather, like everybody knows Mayweather's a great, great defensive boxer, blah, blah, blah. But you know what McGregor, what Mayweather's never really done is put on a show anything beyond a defensive school, right?
Yeah.
So what if Mayweather decides that this is his last fight? So he might go a bit further on the offensive.
That's what I think will happen.
He thinks there's an amateur in front of him.
Exactly.
He gets to put on a show.
Yeah.
It's his ring. He gets to put on a show. And that is the potential moment where he might get slightly unstuck. Like that, to me, is Conor McGregor's only chance.
I think that might happen at some point. And that's something I've been thinking as well. I think you're spot on. I will just say lastly that I think the speed difference, even with Mayweather, is going to be huge because Mayweather is going to be so much faster still. Yeah. And I think McGregor will try and keep it on the outside as much as possible or in the clinch because boxing guys are good at clinch, but they're not as good at clinching as MMA guys are. However, a lot of MMA clinching is round the head, and a lot of boxing refs won't like that. So we'll see how they do that. But I think it'll be keep on the outside as soon as Mayweather comes into range, clinch up with him, and then try and throw him off, and then you're back at range again. I think that's what he's going to try and do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Nobody sees a McGregor victory then.
It's very likely it's going
to
be Mayweather.
I just think it's so unlikely, but I'd love to be proved wrong. Yeah. I would love to be. I mean, the fight's happening. I don't think it's going to happen. So take my betting advice as you will.
He's not going to outpoint Mayweather. So if you're going to put your money on it, you've got to try and hope for a knockout. But yeah.
Just talking about betting, apparently the most bet on fight ever was Mayweather Pacquiao, which was like $70 million.
Yeah.
We're expecting this to do $140 million in bets. It's done, apparently, I think it might have even surpassed $70 million already bets.
Because surely everyone sees a massive outsider in McGregor and things.
Yeah.
There's no harm in lumping a massive chunk.
People put a cheeky 20 quid in McGregor? Because if it does happen, bookies are going to be fucked. But it's more likely bookies are going to be running away with everybody's money.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. So, guys, it's getting a little bit choppy in here, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I've got my sou'wester on.
Yeah.
I don't feel too great. Can we stop?
I don't look like I'm about to go on an adventure with Doc Brown.
Wow. Damn. Oh, I love it. Well, I think I'm just going to pop my head up and see what's going on out there.
What's happening, Coach?
Well, I'll tell you what, that rain's fairly battering down. I think the anchor might have come through as well. I think we're kind of free at the moment. Mark, could you take the helm while I go check up front, see what's going on?
Absolutely. Yep, got the help.
Excellent hand gestures.
Yeah,
this
lovely.
Is safe.
Yeah, it's good. I think we're all safe here.
This is totally safe.
It's good. Do you know what happened the last time we got shipwrecked? I felt really hungover the next day.
Oh, for fuck's sake, not again! Guys, rocks ahead! Strap in!
The rocks,
oh, no. Rocks ahead!
The rocks ahead! After the brave fifers have hit the rocks once more, you know what time it is. It's that time once again when we head for Desert Island. No, wait. The Twilight Zone. Yes, this week we're not at the Desert Island decks. We're at Desert Island decks.
somehow we've managed to stumble across an entire island made of dessert.
I've got my dick in a dessert. What about you guys?
American pie was made about you.
Warm apple pie. Yeah, so fucking hell, guys. An island made entirely of desserts.
A nice little chain of four islands that we can explore.
Yeah,
I didn't think we'd have a visual representation of diabetes in my life, but wow.
It's like one of those every time birds. I look in the mirror.
So yeah, it's interesting that we've ended up on a dessert island. It's amazing the wordplay involved. Such a big leap and jump there for us.
I mean, those 7-Up seas are messy.
We've all smoked salvia.
Note to listeners.
Shit has got pretty weird. I mean, like, right now, I've stumbled my way off the ship, guys. And do you know what I found? I'm on an island made of mint-flavoured Viennetta.
Holy shit! Wow. See, I've just been washed up on a shore of what looks like crumble from the top of an apple crumble.
Nice, yeah. Nice. I mean, if I that's got the sort of solidity you would want for a dessert island.
Yeah, it's also kind of crumbly like sand, you know? So,
well, I've gone...
It tastes quite good.
I've gone with everybody's favourite dessert. I'm on Creme Brulee Island.
Creme Brulee Island.
I've not been so fortunate. Mine's is a bit stodgy. I feel you're stuck in some sticky toffee pudding. Oh. It's a bit messy over here.
Wow.
That it's sort of like the Game of Thrones equivalent. I've gone for something frozen cold, like the Nerve. I'm like Kessel Black. It's White Walkers, like just over the right, over the slightly... the sort of like little chocolatey bit on the top of the Viennetta.
The peak
of the Viennetta. Obviously mint as well. I just want to make that perfectly clear.
Tried to talk to my cousins this week who are from Yorkshire about Game of Thrones, weren't into it. I was all ready to crack some like Ned Stark jokes. That's just what they sound like. Don't watch it, Game of Thrones.
Shot down straight away.
Yeah, so shit.
Well, it's interesting because, like, I'm on this shore. It's kind of, yeah, like I say, crumbly, quite sweet in texture. Some of it's rolled into my mouth when I got washed up, and that's when I first realised I was on a dessert island. God, it's even hard to say. But yeah, but there's like, it looks like there's a volcano just over in the distance, and I think it might be like a melt in the middle chocolate pudding.
Oh, hello.
Just ready to erupt.
Oh, wow.
Spurt chocolate all over the place.
See, I didn't really choose my desert island because it's my dessert island, because it's my favourite dessert. And it's not really probably particularly comfortable to live on either. Living on a giant Viennetta is probably a harsh way to do it. I've got like one of those, like, you know, those science stations at like the South Pole and things like that. I'm basically not allowed to pull my custard chugger out and have a pee outside just in case I freeze my tit.
Custard chugger.
Well, it's a dessert island.
Well, on my island with creme brulee, I was thinking more defensively. So basically, I've got the surface of the creme brulee, which we tiptoe on,
mm-hmm.
But if any honey badgers come towards us from neighbouring islands, I just crack it, and then the honey badger falls into a sea of whatever's...
Warm custard.
Yeah, warm custard. And then
yours is dangerously molten.
It is. But that's also a defensive aspect. And also, we can have little fishing ponds, like where we crack it to fish for custard, bring it up, and we have a ready food supply. Custard's, you know, essentially liquid and food. It's like drink and food all at the same time. Oh, happy days.
Well, I mean, if you...
Oh, and it's a non-Newtonian fluid as well.
I was going to say, yeah, if you fill a swimming pool up full of custard, you can run right across it.
Yeah.
Run right across the top.
No, absolutely true. Yeah, non-Newtonian fluid. Indeed.
Also, I've got to ask, your honey badger on this island, is it quite literally a badger made of honey?
It is. It is. It's
a sticky predator.
Yeah.
Brian May's try and save it.
Yeah, it's dangerous, but it just melts if you put it into the middle of the creme brulee, so it's fine.
honey scent.
We could actually, truly, in the Game of Thrones thing, we could have a what was it? What's it called? A Song of Fire and Ice.
Yeah. Yeah.
The two of us could write a song about a creme brulee island. I might be in it. Maybe I should make like Venice out of Vianetta.
Yes.
Little melted ice cream things with little gondolas going down the side of a little science exploration.
Yeah. It would fit in perfectly to that period of history as well. A Viscount.
Yes.
Going up and down the streets of Vianetta, Venice. In
nice.
In their green foil. Once you were scandalous, green foil halfway down.
I'm going to say as well, I've got one thing here for comfort, and that is a giant marshmallow, which I'm going to make a seat out of. But I do believe, like the bacon on a burger thing, I do not believe that marshmallows and ice cream should ever be seen together.
Yeah, I don't know, there's times when it's fine, although marshmallows go really kind of like solid and stiff when ice cream's involved. They freeze quickly. They are better on the end of a stick. Through a barbecue or a fire,
melted.
Then onto
creme brulee island. It'd be perfect.
Onto a rich tea biscuit and straight in the gut.
Yeah. James, what about your island? What's happening?
Well,
there?
I've been having a little wander and adventure, and I find myself a little bit lucky. I've come across a little chicken coop. You wanna know what they lay? They lay Kinder eggs.
Oh, wait a minute. Why not cream eggs?
Yeah, exactly. Nice.
Because Kinder eggs are just a fucking disappointment.
Cream eggs.
Especially when you choke to death.
That's to give the child something to play with after you've nonced them.
Whoa!
Are we back there again?
Oh, dear God.
Worthless for the ones you love.
Because you never will forget.
Well, I was...
Oh dear.
Well, I was hoping for the entertainment factor of the Kinder egg. I have a little toy and something to play with. And I was about to say something else, it would drop me in it, but it's like, I don't want to fiddle anything today. But I think cream egg's actually a good shout.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot more entertaining, and I think you could probably crack open the eggs, make yourself put it on top of like my burning acid home, stick it off a pudding, and that would make a nice kind of boiled egg melting away.
You guys have definitely chosen a lot of, like, in your surreal dessert, you guys have chosen a lot of very hot sticky sugary substances. That's pretty dangerous. Like, I once burnt myself on a bit of tablet that was cooking at one point, and that was bloody hot.
Yeah, that's nasty. That is like fucking napalm.
I do feel it does help me when it comes to hunting and predators. You know, I've got an advantage in that if I can work out the toffee substance. They won't get to that much. If I can work my way around them, not too bad. I've got people I can... Well, not people, but animals I could kill and eat on and feast upon them and
just let them stick in the toffee.
Yeah. It's like... And if I ever want to lure children, I've got cream eggs there just to help me out with that. There. But allegedly, I'm not going to go any further than that.
So, like, I came across something interesting. Some banana trees. They're quite literally bananas. Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So I was thinking with your Vianetta, I can make a banana split.
You could make a banana split.
Yeah.
I was wondering if... Also, banana splits are kind of like a boat shape as well. It's like a canoe.
You can make a wee canoe out of that.
Foamy bananas as well.
Oh, foamy bananas.
What is a foamy banana?
like your sweetie.
Okay.
Guys, I've just noticed something. Has anyone noticed the waters between the islands look a lot like milkshake?
If it's chocolate flavored milkshake, I'm all over that.
It brings all the boats to the yard.
Oh my god, it's funny how we were in like the North Sea 1 minute and now suddenly it's surrounded by chocolate seas.
I have to say, of all the desserts in the world, that one of the simplest and one of the the most disappointing when it's done wrongly is the crumble.
It can be done really.
It
can be too crumbly.
Uh-huh.
It can be like bits instead of together as a crumble. You know what I mean?
So I had the flatmate who I'm not going to name any names, but if Phil's listening, Phil will fucking know what I'm talking about.
happy birthday, Phil, as well.
Yeah. Oh, happy birthday to Phil. Yeah, indeed. So there was a crumble that we encountered at one point, which honestly, the fruit at the bottom of it was so hideously tart and not sweet. and the crumble, you basically, if you sneezed, the entire crumble would just go away like sawdust. Oh, I'm so, it's the most disappointing crumble I've ever seen in my life. I still have nightmares about it, to be perfectly honest.
Well, it's got to be a good thick consistency, lots of oats and just whatever you've got really that can go into it, but yeah.
For my trees on my my island are tangerine trees, and I've got marmalade skies. It's good. Just to bring a surrealist aspect back into it, yeah.
Is John Lennon floating by on a cloud?
Nah, there's a girl kaleidoscope eyes.
Well, that's interesting. Are we running out of things to talk about?
Yeah. That's very much an experimental section.
Only to say that Busy Island you can only go to after a certain time at night. I was going to choose this one. By After Eight Island.
An After Eight is a perfectly serviceable dessert, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Can I just say, like, after a Christmas dinner or something
like
that? Oh, yeah. Nip into the After Eight.
It's like an aperitif, but at the end.
Right, okay, this will divide everyone.
Yeah.
Do you put the wrappers back in the box, or do you chuck them out?
And back in the box.
Back in the box.
Yeah. Same with you.
You say divide everyone, do you mean just you?
You people are absolute monsters. Do you know how disappointing it is to like put your hand in? You're like, oh, a box of After Eights. Hello. Oh, nothing substantial. Nothing.
We have a thing in our house. I think my sibling started, but my dad got totally into it as well, which is purposely leaving packets of things empty so that people would go into it and then not find something. Because, like, crisps is a classic one. Like, once you take the last bag out, just leave it there. And then someone will come along and go, ah, fuck, for some fucking crisps. It's great. It's absolutely fantastic.
I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before, but at Beatty and Shona's wedding.
The bit after you stood up and said, I object.
Yeah. after that bit. There was a point when everybody was sort of milling about between the ceremony and the dinner kicking off, and my brother-in-law's partner, she was going round with, in fact, possibly one of my other brother-in-laws, going round. The placeholders on the tables were
Tunnock's tea cakes
with your name in it, in a little flag. Yeah, they were going round and very carefully taking the wrapper off the bottom of the Tunnock's tea cake, lifting the tea cake out, stuffing it in their mouths, and then very carefully wrapping it back and putting it on the table.
Bastards!
Is just an unforgivable fucking crime. See, when I caught them at it, I was like, I can't believe you're doing that.
Genius, though.
It changed my opinion of this person vastly. Like, the utter, like, disappointment. I think it's on a level. It's, in fact, it'd be worse than going in and getting the After Eight packet.
If I caught them doing that to me, I would have cut them.
Yeah. That was kind of my sentiment as well. It was like, if these poor people, when they go to open these up and find that there's nothing in them, hell mend you.
That sounds like one of those harebrained schemes you get on Pinky and the Brain when you're
kids. We will take down society.
Tea cakes.
Tea cake, what would... you can use that as like a comfy thing of the...
Let's call that mallow.
Sofa.
Yeah. I think tea cakes could act as like floating... lighthouses. They've got the right consistency where they're solid enough yet light enough.
And they've got a shiny wrapper with the red and the white. Yeah. You can turn it and stuff like that. Definitely. Yeah. That'd be like the Northern Lights.
All I'm saying is you guys are crashing into my island because I'm eating all my tea cakes. Even if they're the size of lighthouses, I'll be all over that.
Do love a tea cake. Great value. Yeah.
Maybe a tea cake with a caramel wafer jammed into it as a lighthouse.
Do you know that often on top of a four finger Kit Kat, four finger Kit Kat, because there's your raft. Oh,
that's a good point.
I thought you were about to start making an Eiffel Tower out of them or something. Actually, that is pretty good. But do you know what's often underrated, and I will give a shout out to right now, is the caramel log.
The wafer gets a lot of props.
The caramel log does.
Yeah.
Another sweet ad I never think gets enough praise is a Caramac.
It's very light. Caramac.
You can only have one, because any more than that's too much. But a Caramac every now and again, and you don't see them as much as you used to as well. So when you see it, you're like, oh.
Do you know what's really disappointing about Caramacs these days, though? Is that they're in just like standard plastic packaging, where they used to come in
foil
with the red, and it was like a little strip tease you did with it as you opened it.
I could never work out.
Hold on.
I've got to say, I could never work out. Like, Caramacs were delicious, but I could never work them out.
It was crack instantly.
They were so exotic. It was like Willy Wonka's golden ticket. Sort of thing, when you open
Although them. I think it's just like vanilla, isn't it? It's just like vanilla essence in a very sort of cheap white chocolate.
So nice.
Very tasty. Yeah. Gold bars. Yeah. Well, that would be our system of currency.
Well, I was also gold bars.
Yeah, gold bars.
It goes well with the pirate theme. I was also going to say we've obviously got a sheriff who goes around the island, which is the Milky Market.
We wouldn't have him for very long because that advert used to annoy me. I would basically have pinned him down and melted his face in the hot creme brulee by the end of it. You know, the Melty Bar kid.
No, I was thinking Milky Way there. The red car and the blue car had a race.
Which is back on now.
Is it?
Yeah.
They're showing that one again.
I've seen it.
They go through a period of being cheap with their advertising, so just recycle old adverts.
Well, in an experimental visit to Desert Island Discs. Dex?
Dex?
Oh, God.
Dex. Desert Island Dix. Yeah.
Desert Island Double Deckers.
Ah, fuck off. Get them to fuck.
I'm going to go and hollow out one of these banana trees and make myself a canoe so I can try and get back somehow to home. Fine. Fuck knows how. Maybe the salvia will wear off at some point.
I've just gone mad on my creme brulee album and I have a white and pink skull as like my guy from Castaway. Just talking to it
Just made it of pink and white.
No, you know, like for white skulls, you get some pink in them.
With the blood inside.
Which I recently found out were made in Kirkcaldy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they were like the equivalent of the rats.
Yeah.
They were my favourite as a kid.
It's like a wee strawberry jam or something inside it.
It's like slightly more strawberry chocolate.
Oh well. It would be nice to see you guys back on the mainland next
week. I'm never coming back, mate.
If we all make it.
Yeah. I'm not coming back. We're not coming back from this.
Just all going to die of diabetes.
One trip too far.
Did stumble across a sherbet beach, but it all melted away from the sea. It was a bit of a shame.
So Fifers.
Did you go for a dip dab?
So Fifers, what would your island be made of? Get in contact with us. And how would you do that, Jamie?
Oh, well, you could contact us through the internet tubes on facebook.com/FiveCodPod. Yeah, start again. facebook.com/FiveCodPod or at FiveCodPod. Twitter at FiveCod. Email us at ken@fiveclub.co.uk. Instagram FiveClub or www.fiveclub.co.uk.
And we promise, if you actually put a review on iTunes, we may actually start doing some preparation. Instead of trying to make things up on the fly.
Yeah, maybe not.
Nah, probably. Almost certainly not.
But we will certainly give us your t-shirt size and we will certainly give you a t-shirt at some point in the future.
Yeah, that's some.
It might be made out of Tonic's tea cake wrappers. just a thought. So it might be a bit itchy, but you know.
Oh, Bernard, what have you done? I fashion myself a fashionable waistcoat. Yeah, it'd be something like that anyway. So yeah, it leads us to that point of the evening where I have to ask James, what is the motto for this week?
Travelling the seas can be dangerous. There are many do's and many don'ts. But for the love of God, don't make a podcast and smoke salvia. We'll be on an island with ice cream and sticky toffee pudding.
That's very specific.
Do you know, that's one of those things, like, you know when you got the warnings for a George Foreman grill? And it always had on the suit,
don't do not grill in the...
No, I mean, yeah, the Milky Bar kid's getting that.
don't cut. Don't, I know where this is going.
The Simon Weston grill.
Oh my god.
You went there. It's too far. That's an internet joke. It's not meant for the broadcast.
It's like Jeremy Beadle's first book, Small Hand for Short Hand from Dad.
No. No.
Short Hand for Beginners.
Oh god, we're all rolling back. Okay. What I was going to say is, like, they always had the instructions that said, do not use your grill, George Foreman grill, in the bath. And it's like, that has specifically had to happen because somebody's done it. Yeah. Somebody's just been going, I'll have a bath, I know what I'll do, I'll plug in and grill some meat whilst I'm in the bath. Or the Xbox, don't use it in a high place.
Well, that was it. The good old Xbox with the Xbox One was, don't put in a high place and allow a young pup, a small puppy, to play with the cables. It's like, what? That is very specific. Which one of your testers had a dog that died? But yeah, no, I think that's sageway advice, and it's time to say goodnight.
Night.
Cheers. Goodnight, everyone.
Gar. Wow, that was some good mic control there, Kutch.
Why are we not in the French?
That don't need show.
I'll get it.
Close.
Who's on the helm then?
Oh no.
Oh god.
Mariah Carey, step over. Kutch with a mic control.
So what I'll do is put in the wee ident. And then you need to come in.
Yeah, we'll do the ladies and gentlemen. So, okay, I'll do it. Do it now.
Well, what were you thinking about doing?
I was going to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time once again when we go to Desert Island. Stop, play the Twilight Zone music.
Yep, that works.
So,